Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on RadioMD, iHeart, or wherever you download us from. Thank you for doing that. We have a wonderful guest today speaking to us about headaches and specifically migraines. His name is Dr. Fred Cohn. He's a headache specialist at the Icahn School of Medicine, where he is an assistant professor of medicine and neurology and a headache specialist, one of the few in the world trained in both internal medicine and headache medicine. His research interests obviously include treatments for chronic migraine and evaluating the burden of migraine to help a large number of people who have it. We'll get to how many people have it because it surprised even me. His website, headache123.com, or you can go to TikTok, Fred Cohn, MD. We're brought to you as usual by longevityplaybook.com. Go to their website, longevityplaybook.com, sign up for the free newsletter, and by LifesFirstNaturals.com, LifesFirstNaturals.com, the makers of both Truebiotics and Bovine Colostrum. Go to that website to see the randomized double-blind controlled trials on why those are beneficial. If you're taking a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, that's the Bovine Colostrum, or the specific areas that the Truebiotic brand, double brand of, if you will, that has enough of the bacteria that gets past your stomach acid to give you very high beneficial counts, as well as the specific process in osteoporosis and urinary tract infections, where the double-blind studies show a substantial benefit. They also make DiResQ, D-I-A-R-E-S-Q, which seems to be very beneficial if you believe the blogosphere, at when people go up in dose with one of the GLP-1s, such as Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, or Zepbound. But let's get back to migraine. Dr. Fred Cohn, headache123.com, and of the Icahn School of Medicine. Dr. Cohn, thank you for coming on. Tell us about how common migraine is. Is it just women, or do men have migraines too?
Well, first, thank you very much for having me here. It's both men and women, and it's a lot more common than you think. Now, it is more predominant in women, but men, you know, are still affected. It's estimated between 40 to 50 million Americans are affected by migraine, and by some studies think it's upwards of a billion worldwide.
That's one out of every seven?
It's estimated as high as that. You know, it's a lot more common. You know, what I typically say is, if you ever experienced a headache that was, you know, severe, nothing like, you had to stop what you were doing, maybe Advil didn't help, the odds are it could be a migraine. Now, there's other criteria and things, of course, but it's a lot more common than people think. Now, frequencies vary. People get it once a month, once a year, and I got patients, it's every day. Every headache is different, but it is a lot more common than you realize.
Now, we're told, I remember that Botox is often used. What's the first line therapies? When I was growing up in residency, we learned about Imitrex. What are the therapies now? So there's a variety of migraines. So some of them come and you know it's going to occur and you're decimated for a day or two or three, literally decimated and can't do anything. Whereas others are mild. And tell us the range and then what one starts on for therapies.
So, you know, first and foremost, migraine treatment breaks down into two categories: abortive or rescue, and preventative. So rescue is meant to, when the headache, the attack occurs, you take it and it relieves the attack and you go back to your business. And then preventative is meant to bring down the frequency, meaning taking the drug itself won't stop an attack, it just reduces the overall amount. And the reason why is, let me phrase it like this. Let's say you get maybe 4 attacks a month. Imitrex, sumatriptan, the triptan family of medications, classic first-line treatment. You know, you may take that to abort it. Something that came out recently in the past couple of years and known as the GPANTS. You might have seen commercials for Ubrelvy, Nurtec, Zavspret. These are a newer class, you know, that targets something from calcitonin gene-related peptide. I'm going to come back to that because I could talk hours on that molecule alone. But that's a newer treatment that's out. And again, that's a rescue drug. But let's say you get 10 attacks, 12 attacks a month. And the issue, it's not GPANTS, but with Imitrex, as you brought up, if you take it more than 10 times a month, you may get rebounding headache. You can't take it. You can't take a drug like that every day. That's where preventative therapy comes in. Usually patients who get maybe 5 or 6 more attacks in a month, I recommend preventative therapy. And those, it's a wide range. Things like Topamax, Propranolol are classic drugs. Botox is a very unique one where Botox is specifically for those who are chronic migraine. That means you have 15 headaches a month, 15, 8 of which are migraine attacks. And just like I was talking about the GPANTS, we have something called CGRP, calcitonin gene-related peptide, monoclonal antibodies. These are once-a-month injections you take. They look like an EpiPen. You take it once a month, extremely effective to bring down the frequency of migraine attacks you get a month. And there's even more therapies than those. But again, every single migraine case I see is unique. It all depends on your various other situations in life. You know, I'll give you an example. Let's say you're someone who you need a preventative therapy, but you also suffer from, let's say, anxiety. Something like Elavil or Propranolol treat both things. Let's say you're someone who suffers a bit also from being overweight. Topamax can help lose weight, but also very effective in reducing migraine frequency. So there really is a wide range, and it's not as simple as, oh, you have migraine here, you know, take this drug. It's an examination of what other factors are going on in life.
Now, when you say other factors in life, do migraines get worse in menstrual periods? Do they get better with menstrual periods? What about during pregnancy? What about during menopause? And what about in males with declining testosterone levels? Does that affect them?
So for what you were mentioning with women, what all those have in common is changes in estrogen. And this is a big theme. We know that changes, not low, not high, fluctuation in estrogen does trigger migraine. And that's believed to be in part that estrogen, that hormone, has a relation with our neural pain pathways. So for instance, most women get the age of migraine onset is when they go through menarche, when they have the first menstrual cycle. It's estimated anywhere from 40 to 70% of women with migraine will get a more severe attack during their cycle. It's very common that the typical thing is women get it when they, if they're going to have migraine, will get it when menses begins, and their migraine may go away when they go through menopause. All the women in my family get migraine. I'm the unlucky guy that gets it. And my mother, my aunt, my grandmother, they're like, oh yeah, when you get older, go away. And I'm like, unless there's a plot twist for me, it's not. And now with pregnancy is a very interesting, you know, time where the first trimester is actually worse on average. Everyone's different, but it typically gets worse in the first trimester. But then the second and third, they actually tend to get much better. Now, to answer your question about men, low testosterone has been brought up, but it's been brought up specifically actually where when people see me as a headache specialist, they typically have tried a lot of things. One of those things is opiates, you know, things like Percocet, or oxycodone, hydromorphone, etc. And what we see is with long-term use of that, there's low testosterone, and that could be related to worsening migraine attack. As far as on our own, that's a debatable thing.
Dr. Cohn, did you study this become an expert in this because you had it? In other words, many people will go into a field because they have a problem in medicine. I wonder if that is what drove you into the headache field. And secondly, how have you managed, meaning do you have dysfunction and have days when you can't function, or between prevention and rescue, are you able to overcome it totally?
So I have a saying, don't trust a headache doctor who doesn't get headaches. most of us in the field do suffer from headaches and migraine. I am a lifelong sufferer of migraine. And yes, when I was started residency as an intern, you don't sleep much in residency. And that's a major factor for migraine. My migraine attack got much worse. And that was where my residency, I did it at Montefiore up in the Bronx in New York City. And they have a very well-known headache center. I got introduced to them, and that was that I knew exactly what kind of doctor I wanted to be. I wanted to be these guys because they helped me out a lot. And in the beginning, you know, I didn't have any treatment. You know, it was just, I get this attack. I would get it once a week. It took me out, disabled me completely. And, you know, I couldn't do my job. I couldn't function like that. And now I have medication that when the attack happens, I take the medication and within 30 minutes to an hour, it's gone. It's as if nothing happened. So since being properly diagnosed and treated has affected, like, yes, once in a very blue moon, you're going to get an attack that's like, all right, it's going to be resistant and a pain. And that does happen once in a while, but it's very seldom. It is not common. I rarely lose a day.
How often are they as manageable for patients as they are for you? In other words, is this a disease that we now, because of specialists like you, can really manage so effectively as very few days of work are lost from it? Or, and I know you're an expert in the consequences of migraine and other headaches, are we able to manage it very successfully for the vast majority of people?
First, I want to say every headache case is unique because we're talking about the field of pain medicine. Pain is subjective. For instance, go back to residency. When I was in the ICU, everything was numbers. You know, it was very black and white. You know, we're talking about pain, which is how you feel. I cannot, you know, you could tell me what's going on, but there's no test I could do. Like, it's not like, okay, you have condition X. I do a blood test. Oh, we got to adjust the medication. This is purely on feel. You know, there's no test I do that indicates improvement in migraine or anything. It's what you're telling me. And every patient's goal is different. And every case is different. What I tell my patients is, we don't cure migraine. They go away. I can't promise that's going to happen. But what I tell my patients is, my goal is to get you back to a functioning life, meaning that you shouldn't really lose a day to headache. And I would say, yes, the vast majority of my patients do improve. You know, and I have a vast range of patients. I have patients, it's very hard to fit in one box. That's why I'm sort of prefacing like that. But I will say, yes, return to function, meaning it's not, pain is not the only marker we evaluate. You were bringing up some of them, missed work days. When I speak with my patient on follow-up, I ask them questions like, missed work days, missed school days. How often are you taking your rescue medications? Oh, you were able to go on a recent vacation. There's a lot of things to evaluate. And I'll give you an example. I had a patient when they started with me, this was 2 years ago. When he started with me, he was underweight because the nausea was so bad. His BMI was like 16, not good. But as we treat him, I was marking his BMI after about 7 months. You know, it's not, these aren't like light switches we're fixing it, but over the span, we got his BMI from 16 to 20. He became, you know, his health, his nutrition, not just, you know, of course, the migraine got better, but the nutrition. So my point is it's not just pain, and you know, there's a lot of different aspects that we evaluate, because this is a condition that it affects every facet. It affects how their family functions. You know, there's a lot of ways to measure it.
Let me ask you a couple other questions. You recently published an article that reviewed the 11 probably best studies on migraine, and one of the things that I think the article noted as I read it was that although the prevalence of migraine, that is the number of people with it as a percent of the population, has stayed roughly the same, the disability score, what you called, I think it was called the MIDAS score, has gotten substantially worse in both men and women. What do we attribute that to? Is that due to the stress of our life, or what causes that?
The study was me and a group of my co-authors, who are very experienced in the epidemiology of migraine. We looked at the studies in the United States, that the population studies of migraine in the United States, and what we found, this ranges from 1989 up until Overcome, which is taking part in 2018. So, you know, 3 decades worth. And we found that the prevalence, the number of people with migraine, has remained pretty stable. So clearly our tools for evaluating migraine, diagnosing migraine, you know, has remained consistent and we're not sort of missing. The issue comes from impact. So the test you mentioned, MIDAS, is a very common scale we use to evaluate the burden and impact of migraine. The questionnaire asks things about how many missed work days, missed school days, chores you can't do around the house on an average of every 3 months. And then you get a number and that will dictate none, mild, moderate, or severe disability. The percentage of people reporting moderate to severe disability has been increasing since MIDAS came out, which is the early 2000s up until the recent one. What's more concerning is the rate among burden in men has been steadily increasing, while the rate in women, while it's still up, has decreased, meaning the rate itself in men is up. This sort of brings up a big question. Why is the burden of migraine increasing? And that's in two camps. A, is this just an artificial answer? Is it just change in methodology, meaning nothing's wrong? These tests, just what the results spat out is what they're showing. Or is something going on? That's what we sort of propose. I don't have any concrete answer. You know, this, you know, research isn't always about having, oh, this is the answer. It's what this paper, in my opinion, sort of did was opened a question. Oh, hey, did you guys think of this? This might actually be a problem. And I hope now that people are doing more population studies to evaluate this. Are there things such as headache treatment being properly utilized? You know, one thing we bring up actually is climate change. Weather is one of the most common triggers of migraine attacks. We're seeing more and more phenomena of severe weather. We had, this is anecdotal, I don't have a study to tell you, but in my clinic in New York City, we got hit with like three pretty strong heat waves this summer in New York City. That's unusual. And I have patients saying like, yeah, my migraine was way worse this summer than last summer. We bring up things, is it obesity? Is it changes? There's a lot of things it could be. And again, that's what I hope this study sort of produces, that inspires, it gives the resources for other groups to do studies to sort of figure out, okay, what's going on here?
We've been talking with Dr. Fred Cohn. You can go to his website, headache123.com, or follow him on Fred Cohn, C-O-H-E-N-M-D, to find out more or to contact him. And obviously, he is an expert in headache in general and migraine, even more specifically, since he's had that and experienced it and gone through it. That is Fred Cohn, M.D., or headache123.com. We're brought to you, as usual, by longevityplaybook.com. Go to their website, sign up for the free newsletter. 188,000 of you have. Thank you for doing that. Or go to Life's First Naturals, our other sponsor, the makers of bovine colostrum, their offshoot product, Dye Rescue, which has some immunoglobulins with it, keeps the length of the width of your, that's a funny statement, I know, length of the width of your intestinal mucosa large in the face of nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs or extreme exercise or aspirin and upper respiratory infections, a lot of things, and even in the face of the GLP-1s, which seem to have that as a mechanism of some of the side effects, that is when you're taking Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, or Zepbound. So that's something to look into and see if it helps you as well. All of those, Truebiotics, bovine colostrum from Life's First Naturals, and Dye Rescue, over-the-counter, as well as at their website, lifesfirstnaturals.com. We'll be back next week. We hope you are. Also want to thank Fred Cohn for such an outstanding job and illuminating the field of headache and migraine in specific. Please do come back. Feel free to rate us. Thanks again. We'll be back next week. And by the way, the A segments, so 1215A is up and is the latest medical news of the week and what it means to you. Thanks again.